podcast for Wednesday, February the 11th. I'm Dario Pop Passarelli, and to my right, I have
Joe Franchese.
The franchise. How you doing this week, Joe? How's it been?
Not bad. It's been going a lot better than it's been going in Winnipeg, that's for sure.
Oh, yes. Well, you know what? I think today it's actually going pretty good. For those that have not heard, we have a major blockbuster trade in the NHL. And considering the new, actually you can't even call it new anymore, but the salary cap era, these are becoming, you know, few and far in between. So the fact that they were able to pull this off, I'll give kudos to both GMs. As I mentioned, for those that haven't heard, the Winnipeg Jets have traded away, main point, Evander Kane to the Buffalo Sabres for a plethora of players.
Yeah, the actual trade is Evander Kane and Zach Bogosian, another former first-round pick, including Jason Kasdorf, which I would imagine is one of their prospects, for the Buffalo Sabres defenseman Tyler Myers, winger Drew Stafford, two prospects, Joel Armia, Brendan Lemieux, the son of notorious Claude Lemieux, and a first-round pick in 2015, which I assume would be one of Buffalo's lower-end draft picks because I don't think they're really giving up on any of their top picks for next year's draft, that's for sure.
Yeah, they haven't confirmed that, but it's definitely not their own pick. It'll probably be, it was either St. Louis's or the Islanders, I believe, is the picks that they have for this year coming up.
So, I mean, Pop, when you look at this deal, do you feel that Winnipeg got a boatload for two former first-round picks in the top five? I mean, Kane went fourth in 2009, Bogosian went third in 2008.
Even before we start figuring out who won what, I think we have to look at in terms of Winnipeg situation and why somebody like an Evander Kane was on the market. We had a situation where, quite simply, he just fell out of favor with his teammates and management. And when I say fell out of favor, I mean they really didn't like each other.
Yeah, it wasn't a good situation there near the end.
No, they had meetings that were missed. I heard Evander wasn't dressed appropriately for one of the meetings, and the players took matters into their own hands. And again, rumor, speculation, apparently threw all of his clothes into the shower, mm-hmm. which he wasn't too pleased about. So there was a lot of friction between the sides, and with all the other teams knowing about it, made it difficult for Cheveldayoff to make the trade. He's the GM for the Winnipeg Jets. And on top of that, Evander Kane decided to have season-ending surgery, which is something I believe he was able to postpone to the end of the season, but he decided to have it now. And right in the midst of Winnipeg going for their... Is it their first playoff push in years?
Yeah, well, it would be their first appearance as the Winnipeg Jets. They've been in a couple appearances as the Atlanta Thrashers.
That doesn't count.
They still haven't won, though, so that organization still does not have a win. Every time they've been to the playoffs, it was a four-game sweep.
Ooh,
yeah, ouch. So that would be a monument for them.
Right, so like you can say, I mean, there's a huge amount of dissatisfaction on both sides there. So that needs to be set up. To put into perspective or into context in terms of how this trade started shaping up. From the Winnipeg perspective, I like the fact that they've addressed two areas. One, they get help immediately. When you talk about players like Tyler Myers and Drew Stafford, are they superstars? Not that I'm aware of. But at least they're going to help compared to an Evander Kane that wouldn't be there at all.
Mm-hmm.
And what I liked about it, which I thought they did get a bit of a, I don't know if you call it a bonus on, but the GM was also looking to the future, and you have two prospects in Armia and Lemieux, and as well a number one draft pick coming up next year. So if I'm a Winnipeg, what more would you be looking for?
Well, I mean, I think it's a simple case of addition by subtraction. What Winnipeg's gaining out of this not only is Tyler Myers and Drew Stafford and prospects and a pick, but I think is just finally getting that somewhat
Headache.
Yeah, some headache out of the room. And I think that helps that core. I think probably the biggest quote that came out of the Winnipeg Jets room was Blake Wheeler when he came out and said, "We're professionals and we get paid a lot of money. And if you don't want to act like a professional, just go somewhere else." And I think that was a real telling factor in the way Evander Kane was seen in that dressing room, especially because last year, apparently him and Blake Wheeler had it out a little bit on Twitter, and they said it was a joke. And clearly you can look back at it and see that it really wasn't a joke.
Nobody's laughing now.
No, nobody's definitely laughing now. I mean, the one thing I will say is when I look at the trade, I'm kind of hard-pressed to believe that Winnipeg come ahead out of this one, simply because of the fact that Evander Kane has all the skill sets to be at least a 30-goal scorer on a consistent basis, which he's shown he can do. Zach Bogosian, I believe, when healthy, is a solid 4, maybe 3 defenseman when he's on his game. I don't see much in I see the size in Tyler Myers, but I'd be very, very, you'd be very tough to make me believe that Tyler Myers is going to develop into a legitimate number 2 defenseman in the NHL. I feel like he has a niche in that he's got the big body, but he doesn't really seem to play with that big body edge unless you kind of get under his skin early on. I mean, Drew Stafford is a solid piece along with it, but although it seems like a big deal for Cheveldayoff, it tends to still sit into his realm of comfort where it's more so for the future. And he's believing in his core right now.
I think, yeah, and I think when you look at it, I look at situations that are more closer to home. Take the Blue Jays, for example. Trying for a push to, you know, they're the team that hasn't made the playoffs the longest in the MLB, I believe. And you have a situation coming up, a trade deadline, and nothing happens. And I know that wasn't the cause of it, but a few weeks later, all of a sudden, you see the team just fall apart. You're not going to get value for value when you're trading somebody like Kane. Because number one, the other 29 teams know you're trying to offload them. And they're going to lowball you. The fact that they got bodies for it, they got, you know, some prospects for it. I think what it sends a message, though, from Cheveldayoff to the rest of the team, is I'm trying. And as a player, that's all you want to hear from your manager. They're trying to make the team better. And I think they can now move forward. They don't have to deal with it. Doesn't have to hang over their heads. And I think that alone makes things a lot easier for the Winnipeg situation moving forward. What do you think about the Sabres?
I was just going to touch on that. I mean, I agree with you. I think for Winnipeg, this was the best case scenario. Regardless of what they got back, I think the team itself can now just move on and continue on to what they're doing. For Buffalo, it's definitely an intriguing trade. I mean, Tim Murray has found a way to find talent wherever he can without necessarily affecting how good his team is this year.
Sorry, did you use good and Buffalo in the same sentence?
Yeah, absolutely. But the predicate before that was Tim Murray. I mean, he works a good fair amount of magic. Having upgraded his forward unit next year without him affecting this year is a very smart play. I absolutely think it is, because if you end up with Eichel or McDavid, you've instantly given him a number one winger to play with. I just think that if you couldn't fit into a room with Andrew Ladd, Dustin Byfuglien, Blake Wheeler, a handful of guys that tend to denote a sense of real leadership, they kind of don't take BS from anybody, and they're about the hard-nosed game, what could this kid potentially cause in Buffalo with really no leadership system there? Like, I understand you have, you know, Josh Georges and Brian Gionta, but this guy wouldn't listen to somebody who won 2 Stanley Cups with 2 different organizations. What's to say he's not going to go in there thinking that I'm the one and only, and this is now my team regardless of what you guys think? Like, I think it could potentially become volatile again. I hope not, because I think Evander Kane's a fantastic talent.
I think we're to find ourselves in a situation, and I don't know if it just lucked out that way, but I look at it, let's say a year down the road, he's upset, you know, or he's causing the same kind of friction that's happened in Winnipeg. Even if the Sabres get Conn McDavid, newsflash everybody, and if you don't want any spoiler alert, you know, just don't listen for the next few seconds. Buffalo's not going to be very good next year.
No, no. And you definitely won't be.
And you can always play off the fact that he's unhappy because he wants to be a winner now or something of that nature. And I don't think Buffalo will have very much difficulty in trading him then either. So I don't think there's that much of a risk for Buffalo simply because you can play off his situation as for whatever it is, saying he's just not happy situation. And I mean, I don't know if he's married. I don't know if...
I don't believe so, no.
I don't know if he has a girlfriend, but can you imagine? Hey, honey, you've been traded. Oh, thank God. It's got to be a city better than Winnipeg.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's have a discussion about that, shall we? I mean, I'm knocking Buffalo, too.
The only relationship I've seen Evander Kane have so far on social media has been with a stack of money, so I don't think the stack of money really cares where they're going, as long as they leave his pocket and go back into circulation. But what I found really interesting is... if you paid attention to the deals, there was two factors that I really enjoyed peeking into. One being, you had two very high cap numbers traded for each other in a win-win situation with Tyler Myers and Evander Kane. And also Zach Bogosian, because he's not a small penny either. I think he's in the $4.5 to $5 million region himself.
Okay.
With that being said, the other feature that I really enjoyed looking at was what a... sometimes 30 goal scorer at the ripe old age of, I believe, 24 or 25, reeled in with a underachieving first round pick on his side. It led me to believe that maybe when you look at the contracts the Toronto Maple Leafs have left in, you know, in their shelves, are they really that bad? Are they really that hard to get rid of? And what in God's name could a consistent 35 goal scorer who puts up 80 points a year get you in this type of market?
Well, I think so one thing that I was looking at was not so much how is it for Winnipeg and how is it for Buffalo, but we have an idea now of what the market value is of certain players, and that's what I'm interested to see in terms of what's going to happen with the beloved or behated Toronto Maple Leafs. They have many players that they need to, I say they needed to trade or need to trade. But there really is, when you look at their roster up and down, only one player to keep, and Morgan Rielly. We discussed a couple of weeks ago about whether or not the Leafs should be blown up and torn apart or tinkered with. And I think we both come to the conclusion that they need to be blown up.
I'm a little bit on the sell house, but still tinker. I mean, I don't think... I'm a firm believer that if you get rid of a guy like Phil Kessel, you'll be hunting for one in two seasons. So I'm not kind of on the boat of completely blow it up. I believe there are keys in this, you know, in this dressing room that need to stay. I just think they need to be moved down a pecking order, to be honest with you.
Well, and this is where... I disagree. And I disagree because when I look at it being blown up, I'm not talking about a couple of rooms. I am talking about the complete foundation gone. I'm looking at a situation where you need 2, maybe 3 years of solid drafting to get a whole new core of players in here. And then you need 2, 3 years to have these players mature and develop. So I'm looking at, you know, this 5-6 year plan in terms of the only way to get a team like a Chicago Blackhawks. I mean, that'd be nice.
Mm-hmm.
But a team that, you know, may win a championship, may win two, but are going to be in the thick of things year in, year out for a decade. And I'm willing to sacrifice the 4 or 5 years that's going to lead up into that. So I take a look at all the players on the Leafs and go, okay, who's going to be a mainstay 5-6 years from down the road? And there's only one player that keeps coming up to mind, and that's Morgan Rielly. They have situations here where, you know, Kadri's up for a salary situation coming up, and they're looking at, and the blood's beginning to boil again.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. Joe, it's time.
Uh-oh.
Ladies and gentlemen, Pop's Rent.
Look at me when I'm talking, son.
You can argue with me, but you can't argue with figures. Two half-nothings is a whole-nothing. And I know what I'm talking about because...
Listening on the radio, and I have people here, knowledgeable sports people, talking about the Leafs have to blow it up. And these same people are talking about, you know what? I think it's a good idea that we can sign Kadri as a, you know, third-line center, maybe a second-line center. It'll be good for Toronto. Excuse me? I have got nothing against Kadri. He may be a decent third-line center, might be a decent second-line center. But he's not part of the puzzle here.
I agree.
He's not going to be part of the puzzle in the future. So if you entertain anything other than a three-year deal, get out of this town. You know? Because, number one, I guarantee you, him and his agent, not going to settle for a third-line center salary.
Well, you got to remember, too, he's a restricted free agent. So there's really... He still doesn't have the ball in his court. I mean, at most, he can get arbitration. But that's also a fear, because when you look at his numbers in comparison to a lot of the younger centers, I mean, like Ryan Johansson is probably making upwards of $5.5-6 million now. You're getting guys like even... Fans were clamoring for Ryan O'Reilly. Ryan O'Reilly makes about $6.2 million.
Yes, but my point being is, when you have these contracts, especially for a third or fourth line center, and again, don't make to mention that with Kadri in particular, but the Leafs are in this position because of the fact that they're giving out these salaries.
Yes.
You know, and I mean, it's at a time where you got to say, stop. If we lose him, we lose him. If he winds up being a superhero on another team, then he's a superhero on another team. But please, if you're going to blow it up, blow it up. That's my rant.
Yeah, I mean, I will say that your Morgan Rielly point is really valid. I found after Morgan Rielly's highlight reel goal, somebody was interviewing him, or he was in a scrum, and they said to him, oh, you know, like, Morgan, talk about that goal. And he's like, honestly, guys, we're not here to talk about a goal or anybody's goals. We're just here to talk about a win. And I was really proud as a fan of the Leafs seeing a younger player come out and have that moment of being somewhat of a team guy. I mean, a lot of the problems that most fans will say, like, for example, the guys that call in the call-in shows, like the Tonys in Woodbridge and the Bobs in Bramptons, is that this team has no team mentality. This team has no thought process as, this is our problem, let's get through it, let's fight through it, and that we can. And it was nice to see, although maybe could be sad to see, that the only person to really stand up in the last little while and say, you know what, it's about the team, not, and in a positive fashion, was Morgan Rielly. And it was great to see.
Well, number one, he wasn't the only one. Reimer called out his team after their horrible... showcase in Jersey when they came back and they won in Edmonton. And number two, stop talking about my friend Tony Woodbridge, all right?
Sorry, Tony. The other thing with Kadri, I'm definitely not Kadri's biggest fan. It's been noted, it's been quoted and cited. As many people that can get their hands on a Joe quote, will usually have I'm not a fan of Nazem Kadri. The player, I mean, I don't know the guy, but I think when... your keys are blowing it up. I definitely agree. If you're going to be getting the returns that you, like Winnipeg, got for Evander Kane. Now, I didn't think they win the deal, because I think you do lose the deal when you're trading the best player in that package. However, having that return for a guy who's put up, I mean, 2/3 of the points that Phil Kessel has and is only a couple years younger... the returns for a guy like that could be something you just have to say, let's do this.
Yeah. And here's my situation. I don't know if we're going to get as much for a Kessel. Maybe we, you know, should get more. Maybe not. K, Kissel does have a longer contract, a bigger contract, so that's going to impact things as well. Same with a Fanouf, if you want to bring him into the equation as well. Then you have your other players, like Franson, who has no contract. So how much are people going to pay for a rental player? You know, that's something that they need to take into consideration. And I think the Leafs right now are looking for a first rounder and a prospect.
Yeah.
That's what the asking price is?
Yeah, I mean, I assume the price is, though, based on the type of teams that are coming after Cody Franzen. I mean, regardless, even if you have like a team like Pittsburgh or just any team that's a contender that's looking for another defenseman.
A top 10 team?
Yeah.
I take that pick and I take a prospect for Franzen. No questions asked.
Absolutely. But if you have a team, for example, like somebody like Vancouver or somebody that's kind of in the middle of the pack and they offer you one of their stud prospects, I think you're not going to shake your head and say, no, I also want your mid-level to high-level first pick.
Yeah.
So I think it's within reason.
Yeah, and you know, if you can start, because right now, and there's a lot of pressure on Chiani to get things done, especially after how quickly Chevalier was able to do it with Evander Kane. Not so much worried about whether or not they trade Kessel. Not so much worried about the trade Fanouf. I'm very concerned about their three unrestricted free agents. They need to do whatever they can to get something for them before they walk out.
I would assume they're going to end up keeping Bernier looking at... I mean, I read a couple articles that were saying that Bernier could potentially maybe be available.
Jonathan Bernier. I love that name.
But I definitely think that you could potentially see the end of Cody Franzen for sure. And if the dismantling doesn't begin until the offseason, maybe Nazem Kadri's a 50-50. I mean, if you lose a guy like Tyler Bozak, there could be a potential of signing Kadri for that 1 year or 2 year based on his restricted ability and then see what you get out of him when the team is building again. But I can't see them moving on from their goalies, especially because you don't have many guys available in the goalie pool.
Yeah, and you know what? I have no problems with Bernier being signed other than what are you signing him for?
Right.
Right, and, you know, getting back to Kadri, is he a second or third line center right now? What do they have him on?
I mean, it depends. I would basically peg in the second line center of the Toronto Maple Leafs. If Peter Holland's going, he might be the third line center.
Okay, and the reason why I bring that up is because a lot of people say, you know, Darryl, you're nuts. You know, what kind of team are you going to field, you know, if you get rid of Kessel and Fanouf and Kadri too and Franzen, then we're going to have a bunch of nobodies. And I'm looking and going, hey, last year, did we sign Mason for $1 million?
Yeah.
How did he do?
Pretty good. Just as good as Santarelli and Winnick are doing this year.
Ding, ding, ding. You're going to find these players. Not necessarily talented, but you're going to find players that are hungry. And you know what? Sign them for a year, sign them for two. Again, it's with the same goal in mind that you're looking at down the road, getting your draft picks, getting your prospects, and then giving them time to build up. So, like I said from the beginning, other than an ex beside Morgan Rielly, I really don't care who leaves and who stays.
Now, see, the hungry players is something that rings a bell for another franchise in Toronto. I mean, you have in the Toronto Raptors, last year I remember at this time we were talking about Patrick Patterson, Gravis Vasquez, Amir Johnson, and to a very, very high extent, Kyle Lowry. Now when you're talking about the Toronto Raptors and their hungry players or necessarily their, you know, their sleeper studs, James Johnson, Sweet Lou takes the contact on those threes. Still Gravis Vasquez, but
Sweet Lou is the man.
Oh,
for more than just his playing abilities.
We don't know how close they are, gentlemen, but apparently Dario knows Sweet Lou very well.
No, he's my idol. If I could be reincarnated, it'd be Lou Williams for sure.
I take Joe Johnson. I like the neck tattoo. I can't rock the neck tattoo. I'm not tough enough because I would cry because I don't like needles. But you definitely got to respect a guy who can sit there and just, like, get a for real neck tattoo.
I'm just trying to remember what his quote was because it was so awesome.
Oh, and he's I'm pretty sure, because honestly, that is definitely what I might get tattooed on me. But he was saying that he's like, he cocked that thing back and he banged on him.
Bang.
And he's so proud. So proud. From an English major? As a Raptors fan.
As an English major, that made me proud.
Oh, man. That Shakespeare couldn't have written that one better. But like you look at a team like that, every year, for the last 2 years, sorry, they've had these guys that come in a very small trade. I mean, sweet, like, you look at a guy like Lou Williams, he was traded for John Salmons.
Yeah, and we got Bebe out of the deal, too.
So, I mean, they're finding ways to find key contributors in the lower end, but at the same time, you see a guy like Landry Fields just sitting there. Now, when a team's winning, it's okay for $9 million to sit on your bench.
Six.
Really? I think his cap is like 8-something.
No. It's between lower? 6 and 7. Yep.
Well, I mean, whatever. I mean, the guy single-handedly killed the PS Vita. But anyways, he was sitting on the handheld games.
Yes. I know what those are. Mm-hmm. I'm not that old.
So it would be interesting if the Leafs don't look over at the next stall and think, you know, if we are rebuilding, what if we think of the way the Raptors work it as finding guys that are interested in the cause? I mean, you see these guys rocking the six hats and all that stuff. It's fantastic to see a team buy into a concept and that concept growing with all of their players through the whole bench. And they all bring that same attitude, which I think is fantastic.
Yeah, I look at some of the buzzwords maybe before you were born. Actually, no, that's a lie. It's just only a few years ago. But you hear people in the Leaf organization, you had people in the Raptor organization saying about, we have to change the culture.
Change the environment
and stuff like that. And I'm a firm believer that it does start from the top down. Brian Colangelo, I know how much in terms of people, you know, pushed him out and glad that he was gone. He is responsible for a lot of the good that's happening with Toronto right now. Ujiri comes in, and you have Lowry, and he sits down with him at the beginning of last season. And he doesn't curse him out. He doesn't say anything. He challenges him. He goes, you want to be one of the best point guards? You think you're one of the best point guards? Go out there and prove it. This is going to be your team. Calderon had been traded already by that point. This is your team. Prove it. Don't hang around your antics and, you know, your negative attitude and stuff like that. You want to be a professional? Come to work every day and lead your team. And Lowry took it on his shoulders. You know, I remember at the summertime this year being worried about how much he would go ahead and go, oh, now he's got the fat contract. You know, how is he going to come out? What does he do? He makes the All-Star game. And not only, yes, you know, the Toronto fans came in and then voted him in, but truth be told, he deserves to be on there. He would have been on there, and now he's starting. Kudos to him. Kudos to DeMar DeRozan. The two leaders on this team, they're the hardest workers on this team. Same can't be said in the stall next door.
Yeah, that's definitely true.
Right? And then you bring in, you know, your class players. Funny, eh? We're talking about Johnson and his class. Last time he was in the city, he was persona non grata.
It's true.
But comes in more mature. Sat out for a number of games. Could have blown up. Had every reason to blow up. Because he's been one of, if not the most consistent players for his role this entire year. And he gets to sit while they're tooling around with Grievous Vasquez in the starting lineup, with Terrence Ross coming off the bench. And he winds up losing minutes. Everybody looked at him. Never showed his disgruntled. Comes in. He started the last game. I don't know if they announced the starters for tonight's game against Washington, but I hope they keep him in there and see how this moves forward, because he's earned it.
Yeah, I mean, I think when you touched on like the whole culture aspect, you strike a nerve with all of Toronto, and it's funny because the nerve is positive in the Raptors uniform and very negative in the Leaf uniform.
The Country Club.
The Country Club, right?
Started with the Sundin days?
Yeah. However, you know, I will say Pat Quinn gets a bad rap on that one because his culture was very, very demanding. And just because those guys were a little bit older, they kind of rode the pine near the latter years. But regardless, I digress. But with the Raptors, ingesting that culture, I think, was key with... A lot of people tend to forget, Masai Ujiri is not just the new general manager after Brian Colangelo. He was also the former assistant general manager to Brian Colangelo. His vision didn't change very much. It changed on the bench. And it didn't change from coach. It didn't change starting roster. Maybe one or two guys. But most of the starting five is still Brian Colangelo's. I think what Masai Ujiri brought in that Brian Colangelo could not, because near the end of it he was clawing for his job, was, let's just play our game and don't worry about what's going to happen, because I know that when we do, what will happen will be winning. And he gave Dwayne Casey the reins to take his team the way he wanted to. Now, for better or for worse, Dwayne Casey makes some decisions people argue with. You can't argue with his record.
Yeah, and any coach, you're going to have that.
For sure. But when you have a general manager with stability, you have a coach with stability, your two best players have stability and are also very much so leaders in the vocal aspect, but more importantly, on the court, whether it be in practice or the game.
They are just as demanding as Casey is.
Exactly. You get that consistency. And I think the key is not necessarily culture, but it's more so consistency. Having the ability to have the same voice through the whole organization is, I think, the main reason why you see the Toronto Raptors internalizing all of this so-called culture and creating that cult and making that culture something that's based on winning.
Yeah. And, you know, I look at it and go, you know, this Raptor team will never, never go through a 10-game losing streak. They just won't allow it. And that includes losing their best player for more than a quarter of the season. DeRozan was out for 23 games. You know, the philosophy of next man up must be, a nice quote. But they believe in it. And I know we alluded to Landry Fields, and very sorry in terms about his surgery, because he was a smart, smart basketball player. I loved the way Landry Fields played his first year. But he hasn't been a negative part. He could have pouted, you know, but he, you know, he practices just as hard as anybody else. And when they call upon him, he's there. And Steemsma is there. And Hayes is there. They're professionals, and they do their job.
Now, when we talk about leadership, I will say we can have a leadership change in one of Toronto's other organizations, and will that alter the future of that team in Toronto FC? I mean, now having...
Actually, just to interrupt you there, it's not only Toronto FC, but the Toronto Blue Jays have a leadership change too.
Right. I mean, you do have both teams in a little bit of a transition based on their core. I mean, you have, with Bradley taking over the captaincy, Jovinko coming into the team, and then in the Blue Jays, speaking today to Shai Davidi, we were talking about how their entire core that the Blue Jays thought 5 years ago was supposed to be the one to move forward with is basically gone. And now moving into that secondary core of the Reyes, Bautista, Encarnacion, Brett Laurie, that's also changing into the Bautista, Encarnacion, Russell Martin, Josh Donaldson, and now you're even moving a guy like Jose Reyes kind of out of that leadership role, and will that change? I mean, both teams are transitioning, I would say, the right way. But TFC intrigues me, the most, only because I feel like that team has such a high possibility of completely grabbing Toronto the same way the Raptors did. Whereas the Blue Jays, I think everyone's still a little bit timid about, it's kind of show me, you know, put your cards on the table before I'll show you mine.
Right, right. And I think with both teams, first of all, it's, you know, we've been there. God, I mean, how many of these Toronto teams, other than the Raptors last year, you know, how many seasons have gone by without a playoff? Mm. You know, it depresses me to go into each one, so I won't. But when you have a situation with Toronto FC, you know, last year they should have made the playoffs. They should have. They had the talent and the payroll that they should have, without any question or doubt, made the playoffs. So I looked at it and went, what caused them not to? And I think that's the goal, isn't it? Make the playoffs, have at least one playoff game. So what caused them? Everybody's saying, well, their defense. Yes, their defense was a problem. It was a problem because they couldn't move the ball consistently from the back four through the midfield to your forwards. And you had someone like Bradley who had a, you know, trot, all the way to the 18-yard line box, pick up the ball from the defenseman, trot upfield, and then try and act as playmaker as well. And then that's a lot to ask of anybody. But now, if you have Giovinco there and Cheyu, the other midfielder that they picked up from France, and they have the Polish defender as well that's coming onto the team, and Altidore up front, you have a situation where Bradley can play closer to the back, help the back four in terms of solidify them. And when he gets the ball, he's not the main focal point to spring it to the fours. Now he's got a playmaker in Giovinco. He's got a professional in Cheyu, who can be an attacking midfielder as well. He can lay it off to the two of them, and then they can supply the forwards with the ball at the right times to go ahead. So I think that fluid motion of getting the ball from the back end forward doesn't only help create offensive chances, but it prevents their defense from getting pinned back. And when the opposing team kept pressuring them, they wound up coughing up the ball, and there goes a goal. So I think it'll help their defense that way. So yes, it does look promising. However, as a TFC fan for a number of years, since the beginning, season ticket holder, show me.
Right. I mean, you still are going to sit there with a show me what you got mentality, but you definitely tend to see in MLS games, you can tell the class from a player once that first touch hits his foot. And I can't see it being anything but a positive notion having these international players coming to TFC and creating a group that is probably one of the youngest stud core of designated players that MLS has had in a while. I mean, even when you look at teams that have been going after, I believe, Lampard or Gerrard, I can't remember which one it was, and then you have Kaká, even the LA Galaxy, or the, you know, aforementioned back in your days, Galacticos. Mm-hmm. I mean, or sorry, Cosmos. You had guys that were near the end coming in and giving you everything they had because their end was way better than any of these guys beginning your middle. At this time, you're getting guys in 25, 26, 27. And if they start winning, you could potentially have a core that grows together who are not underpaid. I mean, we were talking before, Giovinco is the highest paid Italian player in soccer.
Period. I think, and yeah. And I
which
think,
is crazy when you think of him being in the MLS.
And he's in the prime of it. I think he's 27, 28 years old. But,
right.
But definitely in the prime. And you're right, they're coming over there. But and that scares me. The fact that he is the highest paid Italian soccer player. And that he is one of the, you know, you look at Serie A, and the salary right now eclipses almost anything in that league. You start wondering, wow, how much did they really pay for him?
Well, I mean, when you're owned by the MLSE giant, I mean, it shouldn't matter. I mean, if that's what's going to take to win, then by all means. But if the player has enough, you know, mental strength to be able to not care about that and still conduct himself as a professional, I think that's what we're all hoping for. But I think TFC has a lot to look forward to. They have a lot more balance than they did last year. I'm not a huge fan of that Brazilian striker. His name just...
Gilberto.
Yeah, Gilberto. His touch is very, very fluky, I find. Not fluky, but I think...
Erratic.
Erratic, yeah. I think, is the better word. And he seems very... He brings that Brazilian mentality where it's give me the ball and watch what I do with it. Whereas it was causing a lot of loss in a lot of the great balls that Bradley was giving in, or even the midfield when they were making a great play, it seemed like it wasn't working. And him and Jermaine Defoe seemed like they didn't get it along way too well.
No, they had that little tiff on the field. The one thing that I see in terms of a difference in a positive light for Toronto, Jovinko's got a chip on his shoulder. Defoe had a chip on his shoulder. And then when he didn't get selected for the World Cup.
Wait, did you mean fries?
No.
Sorry, cheesy joke. But I don't know, English guys, right? They call them chips.
Yeah. I got it. Okay, maybe our fans didn't. And I'll slap Joe around for him thinking that you didn't catch it.
Oh, the pop.
Yeah, always the pop. But, you know, he played with a chip on his shoulder. And then when he didn't make the World Cup, it was like, you know what? This isn't worth it anymore. And he just disappeared.
Checked out.
Whereas, you know, Giamico wasn't getting playing time at Juventus. He was one of the highest paid players there, but wasn't getting any playing time. And I hope that he spends the year trying to prove people wrong, because I love players with chips on their shoulders, not the fries.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you got... I think the chip on the shoulder you'd hope passes on to the Toronto Blue Jays, just because you hope they play with that attitude that they bring when you're speaking to them.
See, and here I am thinking the complete opposite. I don't really? Know why. Yeah, really? And here's my view. Well, go ahead and do it your chip, and then I'll explain why I disagree.
I think the reason that I'm saying that is because you tend to see, if you follow Joey Bats on Twitter, he's a little bit abrasive. He tends to kind of protect his own, which I'm a fan of. I mean, good for you. And even in the last couple of years, you know, like Brett Laurie was like, he was heat. Like, he was just, that was the best way to explain it. He was just a heat, and when you got close to him, you'd get burned. He was just electrifying. And then it seemed like that battle, that fight, it just didn't correlate onto the field. I mean, watching the playoffs last year, every single time the Royals needed a hit, you could feel it through the TV that they were getting it. And they were. I remember one at bat with their catcher. I think his last name is Blanco. Very big boy. And that guy was fouling balls off left, right, and center, and apparently not the greatest hitter. But when he hit a single that kept that game going. I mean, they went into 12 innings or 13 innings. I think it was in the division championship. And they get through. And you're watching and saying, oh my God, this is fantastic. Like, look at them. They're battling. They're fighting. And a lot of the times in baseball, you tend to lose that because you see the individual play. And it's not, you know, body checking and stuff like that. But you could tell the fight was there.
And it was for the team, not nothing individual.
Right. And when you watch the Blue Jays, you see guys like Marcus Stroman. I think he's the epitome of that fight. He's got that bulldog mentality, which I'm a big fan of. I just hope that having the Blue Jays go in another season where people are saying, yeah, you know what, the East looks like it's winnable, and you guys don't look like the team that can do it. I hope that gets them to go in there with a young crew and an older group hitting, thinking that, okay, you know what, we're going to come out here and we're going to show you what's what, and bring that attitude on and off the field.
Yep. See, for me, when I look at it, and again, that whole team aspect and that fight, I wasn't in the clubhouse, so I have nothing to speak on, but from the little things you hear in terms of rumors, you might be able to piece that it wasn't the coziest of clubhouses. And you don't necessarily need that to win a championship, but I think it kind of helps when you get fragmented. And that's why I think, even though talent-wise, Josh Donaldson was the most important pickup that they had this season, I think your most important piece that they got, go figure, was a Canadian, and their back catcher in Martin. He needs to come in here. You're going to have a young pitching staff, and he needs to say, and this is where I go different with the chip on the shoulder, I think Martin needs to come in here and say, whoa, let's take it easy, guys. It's a long season, but together, we're going to get through this. And if the pitching staff can follow his lead, listen to what he has to say, he's going to get a lot of good out of them. And if your starting pitchers are going well, then maybe Martin in the clubhouse, you know, if it is fraction, if they are have these little clicks there, then maybe he can say, hey, guys, whoa, let's relax. Let's bring everybody in. Let's bring everybody together. And I think he can do that. So I am a little excited about the Blue Jays. I know they still need some help down in relief pitchers and in the 7th-8th innings. But they have a heck of a lineup, 1-5 batting order, I tell you, 1-6.
So, Pop, let me ask you, going into the season, what's the biggest positive you see in the Jays? What's the biggest negative? Doesn't have to be singular. And where do you see this team ending up near the end of the season? Or at the end of the season?
I think their biggest positive is their offense. They have a lineup that should be good enough offensively to be able to have a second baseman like, I can't even think of the name right now, who is a good defensive second baseman, but can't hit.
It's up for debate right now because you got Esturs and Goins. And
none of them are offensively, have proven themselves offensively, but all good defensively. Their starting batting order, they can cover up that one position. So I'm happy in terms of their offense. What I look at in terms of their problems, again, relief pitching. I'm not worried so much that they haven't picked anybody yet because they still have time to pick them up. But I go back to the heyday. How old were you when the Blue Jays won the World Series?
2 and 3, or 3 and 4. So 92, right? 92, 93?
Yeah, you remember it vividly, don't you?
Oh, my God.
Yeah, like it was yesterday.
Yeah, like the rattle in my hand.
One thing, we had a phenomenally powerful lineup, offensive lineup. Our starting pitcher was good, wasn't the greatest. But I guarantee you, when it got into the eighth inning and you had Dwayne Ward, shut down.
Absolutely. That when you got
into the ninth inning, Tom Henke, shut down. Now all of a sudden you're playing a seven-inning game. And that's what we're missing. You know, we're missing the opportunity to make the game shorter. And I think that's something that AA is going to have to work on.
Now, where do you see this team ending up in the East?
In the East?
Can they win their division?
I don't know if they can win their division. And the reason why I say that is, as horrible as the Yankees and Red Sox were last year, they never stayed down for very long. The Blue Jays do have top 10 payroll, but Yankees and Boston are 1 and 2, I think, or 2 and 1. I mean, they're always in the top three, those two teams there. So it becomes very difficult to compete. And, you know, Baltimore made it last year as well. So it isn't the easiest division to be in. You know, if there are any other division, I'd say, yeah, they have a great chance of winning the division. American League East, it's not the NBA's Titanic division, right?
No, definitely not.
But I do think that there will be meaningful games in September.
I mean, I hope so. I mean, I look at this team, and I think my biggest positive for the team is, like you were saying, the batting order. Big fan of 1 through 5. Really, to me, all you need is 1 or 2, 7 and 8. Just to keep that cycle going, to get 1 through 5 back in there. That's not too much of a worry for me. I mean, if you have that type of hitting staff in 1 through 5, you should be okay. My biggest fear and my biggest negative on the Blue Jays is going to be that starting rotation. It worries me that you have a very young staff with two older vets that don't necessarily breed confidence. I mean, constantly saying somebody eats innings, it scares me because that's not necessarily the best.
It is good, though, when you don't have relief pitching.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. You definitely need that. But for me, R.A. Dickey, half of the season, is -2. I mean, the guy comes on the mound, you're probably going to be down 2 homers. Mark Burley, he'll be a 500 pitcher. He'll battle, he'll eat his innings, and that's great. It's going to be tough, though, because it seems like these kids are going to be relying on a guy like Hutchison falling in that in-between range where he's been in it for a couple years. He's got some great stuff, and he seems to have the right mentality. But it's a little scary to be very confident in a younger staff that they have this year than even being just as confident as we were in a staff that we thought would have been great 2 years ago. So that's my worry. I mean, the staff, the starting rotation, I think, is going to be a little scary, but guys have done it before with the young staff. They can surprise. I don't disagree. But I feel like that younger staff is a little bit confusing when you have such an older team with the bats in their hand. Whether that's going to work, I don't know. I mean, end of the season-wise, I probably see them third in the AL East. Don't see them being able to jump over, you know, Baltimore. They're coming off hot. The Yankees always look like the Yankees near the end of the season, at least. But that's going to be interesting without Jeter. That's going to be weird, eh?
Yeah.
That's going to be very weird. I was thinking about that a couple days ago, just looking at their roster. And I was like, oh, man, I'm going to watch a New York Yankees team without Derek Jeter. And that's – he's been, what, 20 years? I'm 24.
And he's been – I mean, he wasn't the greatest. His stats aren't, quote-unquote, that good.
No, he's just the captain, man.
But what a professional. And what a playoff performer.
It's going to, you know, the one thing that's, I think, sad in his career, it's going to be remembered as the steroid era and not Derek Jeter's era.
He'll always have people that love baseball.
For sure.
That whenever it gets to that time that they do the steroid era, they'll always bring back Jeter and sort of right the ship that way. But, you know, getting back in terms of your quandary, love that word, quandary.
I can't spell that.
Over the Jays starting pitcher, Quandry.
There's definitely an E.
You're doubting me? I'm going to look it up soon. Let's go back to Kevin Costner, Bull Durham. And what was the pitcher's name? Deuce. La Deuce. You have young pitchers that have arms. Listen to your catcher. You know, if they listen to Martin, they're not going to be perfect, but the kids are going to be all right.
Well, I hope so. I mean,
and I'm an optimist anyways, for an old guy like me being an optimist.
Well, he has seen it all. So from the Titanic sinking to the Blue Jays winning back-to-back, this has been the Pop and Joe podcast. Thanks for listening.
Be good, boys. Okay, okay, Blue Jays, let's play, play ball. It's a beautiful evening, fans, at the ballpark, and the game starts. Warm summer breezes.